The headlines: Israel is pushing ahead with its deadly airstrikes on the Gaza Strip amid growing concerns about the humanitarian catastrophe in the enclave. Palestinian resistance groups launch more rockets toward Israel as the Israeli death toll from the Operation Al-Aqsa flood rises to 1,300. And more pro-Palestinian solidarity marches have been held around the world as Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip continue to claim innocent lives. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israeli warplanes have targeted yet another residential building in northern Gaza as the regime's deadly onslaught on besieged Palestinian territory enters its sixth day. At least 15 people were killed and dozens injured in the strike on the building in the city of Jabalia. Meanwhile, emergency workers in Gaza pulled the bodies of 18 people from the rubble of two shattered houses in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry says the death toll has risen to over 1,350, with more than 6,000 wounded since Israel began pounding Gaza on Saturday. It says most of the casualties are women and children. According to the UN, some 340,000 Gazans have been displaced. Brazil, which currently holds the rotating presidency of the UN Security Council, called a meeting of the body on Friday to discuss the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Palestinian resistance groups launch more rockets toward the occupied territories as the Israeli death toll rises to 1,300. The Hamas resistance movement says the rockets were fired toward Tel Aviv in response to the killings of civilians in Gaza. According to Israeli media, multiple rockets fell in northern Israel, including Netanya and Hadera. Resistance forces have also launched multiple rockets at Israeli targets in the north of the occupied West Bank. The retaliatory operations come as Israel has been amassing its troops and tanks near the Gaza fence, getting ready for a ground invasion. Israel has used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs in its strikes on Gaza's Karama neighborhood. Over 2 million Palestinians are trapped in the Gaza Strip, which is known as the world's biggest open-air prison. The International Committee of the Red Cross has warned that hospitals in Gaza are turning into graveyards after equipment stopped working due to a lack of power supply. The humanitarian organization says power cuts have put at risk the lives of newborns in incubators, elderly patients on oxygen, patients on dialysis, and others. The ICRC says that all 13 hospitals in Gaza are only partially operational because of severe shortages of fuel and crucial medical supplies. Hospitals across Gaza are reeling from a shortage of staff and supply, while the number of critically injured is growing due to indiscriminate Israeli bombardment. On Wednesday, Gaza's sole power plant ran out of fuel and shut down after Israel's decision to cut off supplies. Three of the five water plants in Gaza are also out of service. The Israeli bombardment has leveled 1,000 homes since Saturday, and many in Gaza are facing dire shortages of water, fuel, and medical supplies. More pro-Palestinian solidarity marches have been held around the world as Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip continue to claim innocent lives. Thousands of protesters hit the streets of Jordan's capital, Amman, demanding the government to end its relations with Israel and to expel the regime's ambassador. In Chicago, protesters condemned Israeli aggression against Palestinians and chanted anti-Israel slogans. The outpouring of anger against the occupying regime also fueled rallies in South African cities. A large number of people protested outside of the U.S. consulate in Johannesburg, criticizing Israel for what they called the oppression of Palestinians. Also in Cape Town, people expressed outrage at Israeli bombings of Gaza, calling for the liberation of Palestine. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution describes as a destructive quake the recent anti-Israel operation by Palestinians. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the operation has devastated some of the fundamental structures of the occupying regime. He called it an irreparable defeat for Israel in terms of intelligence and military. Ayatollah Khamenei made those comments after Palestinian resistance fighters launched a surprise attack against Israel.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans.
Meanwhile, the Israeli regime and disagreement its aerial strikes in the Gaza Strip has killed hundreds of people, leaving the besieged territory in ruins. Palestinian health officials say the situation in Gaza's hospital are indescribable as the Israeli regime has cut off food, water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave.
The ferocious bombardment of the Gaza Strip has left the besieged territory in ruins. The residents of Gaza are facing unimaginable suffering. Aid groups say the damage to water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities have already disrupted services to more than 2.3 million people there. Israeli officials have cut water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave. Israel is squeezing Palestinians in Gaza further, extending an existing 16-year air, land, and sea blockade of the territory. Legal experts have been raising the question of whether Israel's actions could be considered a war crime by the International Criminal Court.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza was extremely dire before these hostilities. Now it will only deteriorate exponentially. Medical equipment, food, fuel, and other humanitarian supplies are desperately needed, along with access for humanitarian personnel. Relief and entry of essential supplies into Gaza must be facilitated, and the UN will continue efforts to provide aid to respond to these needs.
According to the UN, more than 187,000 of Gaza's 2.3 million people have left their homes. There are no bomb shelters in Gaza. Residents who have lost their homes have nowhere to turn except the 83 UNRWA schools across the territory. According to Palestinian health officials, Israeli strikes have targeted hospitals and medical crews. Hospitals are overcrowded with injured people.
Health facilities, patients, health workers, and civilians in general have to be protected and safeguarded, as Dr. Tedros has said over the week.
There is a shortage of drugs and medical supplies and a shortage of fuel for generators. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has called for a safe corridor to ensure the entry of urgent medical aid into Gaza's hospitals. The Red Crescent has delivered some medical aid to Gaza through the Rafah crossing, but the delivered aid is far from enough to alleviate the pains and sufferings of the people in Gaza. The Gaza power plant, now the only source of electricity, has run out of fuel. The loss of electricity will directly affect hospitals and the water supply.
Let's get some updates on our developments regarding this. Mariam Saleh joins us from Beirut, and for an analysis, we have Asa Winstanley, who's an investigative journalist, joining us from London. Welcome to you both. Mariam, first over to you. What do you have on your side?
Well, we, of course, in Lebanon are looking at daily solidarity with the Palestinian people. You're seeing it on the streets. You're seeing it in the schools. You're seeing it at universities. Wherever the people are, they are making small gatherings in order to show their solidarity and their support for the Palestinian people, especially in light of what they are calling as a genocide. So today we have actually a protest, which is for those free professionals whether the nurses, the doctors, the lawyers, university professors, they have all tried to gather here today after their jobs to say that they are launching an outcry against the silence, first of all, of the international community, and second of all, against the fact that the United States continues to be biased towards Israel despite the clear genocide and killings inside Gaza. And of course, we are hearing right now one of the speeches of one of those who are one of the members of Hezbollah. He is speaking also at this very moment, and he is stressing that there is a project. There is a project for the U.S. and Israelis that has been ongoing for 75 years. They continue to try to take control of the entire region, but now what has happened is a total change of course, is a total transformation of what we had seen from the beginning of the establishment of this Israeli entity that back in the 1948, in the 1960s, and back even in 73 when the Arab armies were ready to go and defeat the Israelis, and they did defeat them. They caused a lot of, they inflicted many losses in the Israeli army, and still the majority of the Arab and Muslim world was deceiving and was only that of treason, and they all went for normalization of ties. That was something that was shameful, that was humiliating. However, what we heard now in the speech is that, however, now things have transformed. The resistance of the people, whether it were in Lebanon or the resistance of the people in Palestine, has grown bigger and bigger, and that is what is true. This is what can really bring about liberation. And these are the words, like I said, of these people who are people of every walk of everyday life here in Lebanon. We're talking about, like I said, doctors, nurses, lawyers. They've all come here to show their solidarity. And we are here facing the United Nations headquarters in Beirut, and they are going to extend a letter to the United Nations Secretary General to stress to them that this is not just an issue that is now related to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. This has to do with the crisis of an entire people, people who have been under occupation and under constant killing and systematic destruction and confiscation of their homes for decades now. So, like I said, this is just part of the shows of solidarity that we are looking at in Lebanon, across the country.
Thank you very much for that. Let's bring in Asa Winstanley, who's an investigative journalist, joins us from London. Asa Winstanley, welcome to the program. I was scrambling to figure out a question to ask you, but I think what I'm going to ask you to do, based on what I investigated, is what you have stated on your ex, formerly known as Twitter account. Palestinians did not choose the war Zionism has imposed on them. They have every right to defend themselves against 75 years of occupation, settler colonialism, and genocide. The blood of every death is on the hands of the occupier. Every death is the responsibility of Israel. There are people who are going to disagree with you on that. So tell us why you thought it was important for you to publish this and highlight this.
Well, the context I'm working in is the West. The Western media we're seeing at the moment is particularly untrustworthy on the issue of Palestine, especially. The Western media has been putting out all kinds of atrocity propaganda, essentially, from Israel, and you know, unverifiable and highly dubious and often anonymous Israeli sources. And we're seeing, and these disinformation stories are a way for the Palestinian resistance to be delegitimized in the West. And so the context of the British media and the Western media in general, when it covers the issue of Palestine, is always missing the actual reality on the ground and the real history and the immediate history. And even the last year, for example, is always missing. So, for example, it's never mentioned or very rarely mentioned in the Western media that even before the start of Al-Aqsa flood operation on Saturday, around 250 Palestinians have been killed this year, a record number of killings by the Israeli occupation forces in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And so we can see that, you know, the idea that this operation by the resistance forces came out of nowhere is a really misleading one. And even deeper than that, the actual fundamental cause of violence in Palestine is missing the fact that Palestinians were driven out of their homeland by force, by violence, by massacres, even by rapes in some instances by Israeli and Zionist forces in 1948. It is documented in Israel's own history books and Israel's own media that that happened in some instances. That is what happened in 1948. 800,000 Palestinians did not choose to leave. They were forced out at the barrel of a gun. And that is what is missing in the Western media far too often, and so almost entirely. And so that's why I tweeted what I did.
Well, when you talk about the way that Israel has gotten away with what it has gotten away with throughout the years and decades, they needed a way to get away with it. And one of the ways that they were able to do that, I think, has been the fact that they have received the support, most notably coming from the U.S., and then next to that, the allies in Europe, Western countries in particular, in Europe, for example. But the way that the U.S. has supported Israel is to the point where there is no accountability that Israel feels like it has to give. Tell us more, if you can, about the supporting role of the U.S. and maybe the fact that it has played as a destructive role as Israel has had on Palestinian lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when the leader of the Lebanese resistance, Said Hassan Nasrallah, famously stated that Israel is weaker than a spider's web, you know, he wasn't exaggerating. This we've seen very graphically over the last few days in the start of the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. We've seen how swiftly the Israeli occupation forces began to collapse. And the fact that Israel is so vulnerable to a weaker military force, as sophisticated as the Palestinian resistance has become, you know, it doesn't have the vast resources that the occupation entity does have. And so the fact that Israel is able to get away with these crimes and what it does and the ongoing settler colonization of Palestine is due to the impunity it's given by the West. It's due to the, you know, $3.8 billion a year now that it receives carte blanche from the United States. It's due to the political support that it receives from Europe, from Britain, from Germany, from France. And it is due, it has to be said as well, to the increasing normalization with the Arab regimes as well.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Limelight. A According to a new survey, 39% of the Canadian public say they were in a worse place financially than they were a year ago. At the same time, only 20% say they're in a better place financially. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The site of Yahoo News has covered this story and tells us more. A new survey found Canadians are concerned about the state of their economy, with more than half expecting the country will go into a recession within the next year. That's according to software company Dye & Durham's latest quarterly Canadian Pulse report, a survey that gauges consumer sentiment on the economy, real estate market and technology. The survey of 1,001 Canadians found that 54% expect the country to slip into a recession within the next year, while 32% believe Canada is already in a recession. This comes as high interest rates continue to weigh in on Canadian finances. The Bank of Canada has hiked its benchmark interest rate 10 times since March of 2022, as it tries to wrestle inflation back to its target rate of 2%. While the central bank stayed on the sidelines when it issued its last decision in early September, leaving the interest rate at 5%, a resurgence in the consumer price index, the CPI, has raised the odds of another hike. Martha Vallance, Dye & Durham's chief operating officer, said in a news release, "It's clear that many Canadians have been feeling pinched by this high interest rate environment and have seen their purchasing power throttled over the past year." She added, "This has had a downstream effect on everything from housing and retail to legal services over the past 12 months. According to a new survey, 39% of the Canadian public say they're in a worse place today financially than they were a year ago. At the same time, only 20% say they're in a better place today financially compared to a year ago. Canadians also reported spending more money this year on groceries, 76%, on gas, 65%, on car insurance, 58%, and home insurance, 56%. The higher costs have resulted in more than half or 53% of those surveyed opting to put less money towards personal savings. Another 35% say they're putting less towards retirement and registered retirement savings plans, and 45% have reduced their charitable donations. Inflation in Canada accelerated for the second month in a row in August, jumping 4% as the price of gasoline surged. With gasoline prices continuing to rise throughout September, economists expect the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, will remain elevated. The website of Reddit has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to new National Payroll Institute research, more than one-third of working Canadians are financially stressed. That's a 20% jump since last year. The annual survey conducted through Canada's Financial Wellness Laboratory reached a sample of 1,500 working Canadians between 21st of July and 1st of August. The findings put 37% in the financially stressed category amid rising costs and dwindling pandemic-era savings. National Payroll Institute President Peter Xenotakis stated in a news release on recently, "With interest rates, inflation and the cost of living all continuing to rise, for many working Canadians, navigating these factors have negatively impacted their financial wellness." Peter Xenotakis added, The frightening reality of this storm is that the contributing factors to financial stress are becoming more challenging than ever for Canadians to overcome. According to researchers, households had been sheltered by historically low borrowing costs and money squirreled away during COVID-19 lockdowns. Now, they say, savings is more challenging than at any point during the past decade, with 63% of those surveyed saying they spent all of their net pay. 30% said they spend more than what they make, tapping credit or savings to get by. Among the financially stressed, researchers found 66% live paycheck to paycheck, with half saying they are overwhelmed by their debt. More than half, or 55%, said they feel more isolated due to the rising cost of living. Peter Zanatakis added, these results underscore how serious the storm is. For 40% of financially stressed respondents, the research found their circumstances negatively impacted their job performance through lower productivity and lower engagement. A similar study last year by the National Payroll Institute and the Financial Wellness Laboratory of Canada found the financial well-being of Canadians had declined steeply at the time, with paycheck-to-paycheck living up to 26% over 2021. Agence France-Presse, AFP, has also covered this story and tells us more. Canada is gripped by a surge in homelessness that has seen tens of thousands of people priced out of rental and real estate markets and left to live in the streets of the so-called wealthy nation. Researchers warn government data is vastly underestimating the number of homeless people across the country as the social ill spreads from major cities to small towns. According to a new report published in September, in Quebec, one in two homeless people can be found in rural parts of the eastern province, instead of mainly in Montreal, as had been the case in the past. According to the Quebec government report, nearly one in four homeless people found themselves on the street after being evicted from housing. Karine Lussier, director of a local anti-poverty organization, says, in Granby alone, we need at least 1,000 affordable housing units. Between 2018 and 2022, the number of homeless people in Quebec increased by 44%, their numbers swelling to 10,000 last year. Karine Lussier said, Indigenous people, who represent 5% of the Canadian population, are particularly overrepresented in the streets of Canada, especially the Inuit. Mayor Julie Bourdon, mayor of Granby, said, visible homelessness did not exist 3 years ago in Granby. She admitted that rents are very high now compared to 2 years ago. The city, rather than dismantling the camps and relocating the occupants, decided to opt for maintaining what it calls places of tolerance.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio. with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatul Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing supplication number 8 of this beautiful supplication, and that is about Imam Sajjad alayhi salam's dua when seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions. And we were still discussing verse number 1, where Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam seeks refuge of Allah from specific traits. So he starts saying, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajanil hirs wa sawratil ghadab wa ghalabatil hasad وقلة القناعة وشكاسة الخلق وإلحاح الشهوة وملكة الحمية. The translation of which is, O Allah, I seek refuge in you from the arousal of greed, the vehemence of anger, the domination of jealousy, the frailty of patience, the paucity of satisfaction, the malice of character, persistence of passion, the disposition to vehemence. Now, inshallah, we will look at these verses and these phrases one by one and reveal the problems that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is trying to seek refuge Allah from these problems.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatul Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana.
The first thing that Imam mentions after saying Allahumma inni a'udhu bika, he says, min hayajanil hirs. O God, I seek refuge in you from the arousal of greed. Now, another very important thing that we would like to mention before we go into this discussion about greed is, because we are talking about the evil traits that a person usually gets within his lifetime and develops within his lifetime, it is important for us to know that how do these traits come about and how do they station in the soul of a person. Because usually the soul of a person, when he is created, he has an unsullied disposition, a disposition which is pure. In some narrations, we find that what is mentioned for such a pure soul, whether he is born in a Christian family or a Muslim family or a Jewish family or any other kind of family, when he is born with what is known as fitrah. Fitrah is that innate, unsullied disposition that doesn't even, you know, like to do bad. It only likes to do what is godly, all right? And then the parents, due to training, يُهَوِّدَانَهُ أَوْ يُنَصِّرَانَهُ أَوْ يُمَجِّسَانَهُ, as riwayat tell us. Then it is the parents who make the children Christians or Magians or Jews, depending on the training that they get. But if the training is proper, then you find that they become powerful believers because of the training.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So what is important for us to know is that how do these evil traits come about? There is a law that in one of our earlier discussions we have already pointed out to this law, but then because this subject is in question here and we are trying to address this subject here, it is important for us to know and remind ourselves about that principle that we already talked about. And that is that usually when a person does a good thing or a bad thing, there is a mark that is left in his soul. And if that deed is repeated, then the mark becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. A time comes that that mark turns into a habit, which we call a trait. It becomes a second nature. And after a certain time, it also unites with that soul. And then it becomes a part of that soul. So, for example, if a person tries to do something that pertains to open-handedness, and he is open-handed, and he, for example, gives charity today, tomorrow, day after tomorrow, increases his charity, is so selfless that even when he does not have enough, he tries to even sometimes take a loan and gives charity and so on. A time comes that it becomes a part of his soul. First, it is in the state of a mark, which is known as hal. And then, because of repetition, it becomes ingrained and stationed in the soul. It becomes a second habit, and therefore it becomes a trait, which is known as malaka. And then a certain time it becomes such that it becomes a part of himself. It cannot separate from himself, and that is a very high level. This is with regard to positive attributes. Negative attributes are the same. If a person does evil, for example, he displays an action of stinginess and he repeats that action of stinginess, a time comes that his soul is actually mixed with that and he becomes one with that. And really, if the veils that cover him were to be unraveled, he would see the problems that he is facing because of his stingy soul, because of his niggardly soul. And therefore, this is the process which is known as going from a state of soul to a trait of soul. And therefore, when we are talking about Hayajan al-Hirs, that inshallah we'll talk about, or Sawrat al-Ghadab, that the anger that a person is overcome with, and all these evil natures that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is talking about, these things are formed because of repetitive actions. That is why a person gains these, and that is why he does these things. That is why he gets agitated. That's why he gets, angry. That is why he gets niggardly. That's why he becomes greedy and so on. Inshallah, we'll continue with our discussion in our next session. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Hargez nagirat to abad aqa kasi jay to ra hargez makhaz از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را یا سجاد.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the United States, former President Donald Trump is seeking to reassert himself as the Republican kingmaker in the fight for the Speaker of the House of Representatives. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Cable broadcaster CNN, the cable news network, has covered this story and tells us more. There was only one way the chaos in the Republican-led House, likened on Thursday, 5th of October, by one of its members to a stupid clown car, could get more extreme. Enter Donald Trump. The former president dived into the mayhem following the ouster of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, characteristically seeking to cast himself as kingmaker and to steal the spotlight for himself. On a day of drama that recalled the pandemonium inside the Trump White House, the ex-president's camp floated rumors of his potential first visit to the U.S. Capitol since his mob ransacked it on 6th of January 2021. Then Donald Trump teased the possibility that he could even step in as Speaker of the House himself on an interim basis. But the ex-president's biggest bombshell was still to come. Shortly after midnight, he endorsed Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan for the job. "He will be a great Speaker of the House and has my complete and total endorsement," Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social network in a post that spent more time lauding Jim Jordan's prowess as a student wrestler than his political career. The Ohio Republican, who is one of the most polarizing figures in Washington and one of Donald Trump's most loyal attack dogs, is playing a key role in an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. Jim Jordan, who is running against the Republican House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana for the top job, would likely augur a new period of fierce combat with the White House if he wins the speakership. He has opposed the U.S. lifeline of arms and ammunition to Ukraine, and a Republican House majority led by Jim Jordan would likely increase the chances of a government shutdown next month in a showdown over spending with Democrats. But Jim Jordan's candidacy and a Trump endorsement will likely alarm more moderate Republicans on whose seats the thin GOP majority was built and who fear voters in their districts will be alienated by Donald Trump on the top of the ticket in 2024. The backing of these and other centrist Republicans could be critical in the race between Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise, the latter of whom may have more appeal, especially with major donors outside the far right of the party, than Jim Jordan. Steve Scalise, who survived the 2017 shooting at a congressional baseball practice and has recently been treated for blood cancer, is widely popular in the conference. He has also voted in favor of more aid to Ukraine, a factor that is important for some of the moderate Republicans who are closer to the GOP's traditional hawkish internationalism than Donald Trump's Make America Great Again nationalism. Plans to hold a joint interview between Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise on Fox News on Monday, just the day before a scheduled meeting with the House GOP conference, were quickly upended after several House Republicans reacted angrily to the plan, with one calling it insanity and another saying it will turn the speaker's race into a circus. Facing blowback, Jim Jordan said he'll speak to the conference before participating, throwing the timing of the Fox event into question. Jim Jordan believes it is crucial to meet with the GOP conference before the event. Donald Trump's decision to throw himself into the fray as the speaker's race escalates capped a wild week that started with Washington continuing its blessing after a sudden weekend gamble by the then speaker, Kevin McCarthy, headed off a government shutdown that had seemed inevitable. But it was the ultimate false dawn. As the next weekend looms, American governance is paralyzed because Kevin McCarthy has been toppled by GOP right-wingers after only 9 months in a post he'd pursued for years. And no one knows when the House will have a new speaker or who exactly will it be. National broadcaster NBC News has also covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump waded into the contested race for House Speaker on Friday, 6th of October, throwing his support behind one of his top allies on Capitol Hill, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan. "As president, I had the honor of presenting Jim with our country's highest civilian award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So much is learned from sports, and Jim was a master," Trump said of the Ohio Republican, former NCAA wrestling champ and coach, in a post on his Truth Social platform on Friday, 6th of October. Donald Trump said on Truth Social, "He's strong on crime, border, and our military, on Veterans Affairs and Second Amendment. He will be a great Speaker of the House, and as my complete and total endorsement." The endorsement appears to take Donald Trump himself out of the running for the speakership after several GOP allies, including Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Troy Nels of Texas, endorsed the former president for the job following Representative Kevin McCarthy's ouster from the position. On Thursday, 5th of October, multiple Republican sources confirmed that Donald Trump was considering a visit to the U.S. Capitol early next week. In the words of one GOP lawmaker familiar with the plans, the visit would be a bid to unify the Republican Party after Kevin McCarthy's stunning removal and amid a fractious brawl between Jim Jordan and Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, to seize the Speaker's gavel. Speaking on Friday, 6th of October, with John Solomon, a right-wing political commentator and founder of the website Just the News, Donald Trump said he hasn't decided whether he'll visit the Capitol Hill next week. Elected to Congress in 2006, Jim Jordan began his career in Washington as a conservative bomb thrower. Like Steve Scalise, he led the Republican Study Committee, the largest caucus of conservatives on Capitol Hill. But frustrated that the group was too big and slow, Jim Jordan, along with then-representatives Mark Meadows and Mick Mulvaney and Ron DeSantis, founded the smaller ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus in 2015. Freedom Caucus members named Jim Jordan their first chairman, and later that year the group was credited for forcing then-Speaker John Boehner, an Ohioan like Jim Jordan, into an early retirement. A terrorist, a legislative terrorist, John Boehner said of Jim Jordan during a no-holds-barred interview with the website Politico in 2017. Because of the reputation, some moderate members of the Republican conference could balk at a Jim Jordan speakership. And because of the GOP's razor-thin majority, it would take just 5 centrist Republicans to block Jim Jordan in a formal speaker vote on the House floor, if all the Democrats unite behind Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York. But in recent years, Jim Jordan underwent a stark political transformation. He aligned himself with Kevin McCarthy, stopped the public attacks on the Republican leadership team, and was brought into the leadership's inner circle. In fact, it was Kevin McCarthy who pushed for Jim Jordan to get the top GOP slot on the Oversight Committee and later the powerful Judiciary Committee, where he is one of the 3 leaders of the impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
Ad-Rahi Qur'an.
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله. Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This hadith is about how the intention of the believer is better than his action. As you know, intentions and niyat, which is the Arabic word for intentions, is a very important topic, especially in Islamic ethics. That is because whenever they want to assess and evaluate whether a certain action is good or not, or they want to determine the level of goodness of an action, they explicitly state, the experts in Islamic ethics and akhlaq, they state that this depends on the nature of the intention with which the action was performed. And this general rule and law, it is something that they derive from the very famous prophetic hadith and tradition in which the Prophet, as you know, he said, إِنَّمَا الْأَعْمَالُ بِالنِّيَّاتِ. This is every Muslim, he knows this by heart, this very famous tradition in which the Prophet said, actions are by intentions, which in essence means that the spiritual and moral value of every action is proportionate and corresponds to the goodness and the righteousness of the niyat and the intention with which the action was performed. Right. So in line with this general rule, in this beautiful hadith, the imam, he says that the good person, the good believer, right, he always intends to do more than what he ends up doing. And because of that, the intention of the believer is always better than the action that is practically performed by the believer. Let's look at the hadith and then we can talk about it, inshallah, more in detail. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, the intention of a believer is better than his action. That is because he intends good that he cannot perform. Right? The believer, you know, this is something that, you know, has also been mentioned in other traditions as well. For example, we have one hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam, is a very famous hadith, in which the Imam said, God loves the very high and